Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Chris Jackson.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. You know, Chris, I was invited to do a panel yesterday, and I got a, and they also asked me to do about a 10-minute presentation. So I had some prepared notes, kind of as an overview of reliability. I don't know why they thought I knew something about reliability. And a hardware startup meetup type group. So it was a bunch of people in Silicon Valley that are in either thinking about or in the throes of designing something. Many of them are in startups. And so it was a good crowd. And I asked people before we got started, you know, why are you here? And he says, well, reliability is important. I just came after out of a product that failed because we didn't pay attention to it. Or I know it's important. I want to see if I could take away some gems for you to learn about it. And so, oh, okay, I appreciate that. And the first question I got when we got on stage, basically, and talked about reliability briefly, and then the first question was, well, what's the gist of reliability, right? What do I really need to do to get it? And I thought for a second, well, that's a good question. What would you tell a startup, right? Three people in their garage that are creating a new product. And here in the Valley, we've got facilities that go to production and make prototypes pretty darn quickly. So it becomes an important question in my mind. And I was trying to impress that on them early in the concept phase. But he was saying, well, what do we do? What's the gist? How do we get it? And how would you answer that question?
Yeah, I think that's a very wide-ranging question. In its simplest form, the gist of reliability is, I suppose, what we often say, you focus on the vital few ways your thing can fail and not the trivial thousands. Well, that's at least part of the answer. It is that mindset, not trying to pass a test, not trying to adhere to a standard or specification. The gist of it is always trying to work out how your design sucks. And there's usually only a couple of really big ones, and focus on fixing those ones, and an ongoing process where you focus on the vital few ways your system can fail. And then everything else flies on from that.
Yeah, pretty much. I often summarize reliability as we reliability engineer, our role essentially in an organization is to try to help people understand what will fail and when. And it's good advice to focus in on the failure mechanisms, right? How does it fail? What is it that's going to cause a problem for the customer? The hard part is, and this was explained to me years and years ago, was that, Fred, you always come into the room and tell us how it's not going to work and all the issues and all the risks and all the ways it's not going to work as we expect it to. And then he looked at me and says, and you also bring samples and videos and data that shows how many ways it's going to fail. And he looked at me and went, it's so depressing. yeah, well, that's my job. And he said, you realize that all those people you're talking to are in the design space. They want to make things that work, right? They are in the success realm. They believe that their design is addressing all of the issues and margins and things they can think of. And if you ask any, whether you Chris or our listener, if you ask your design teams, do you consider how it's going to work over time? Are you considering how it's reliable or not? To a person, they're going to say yes, right? Yet it's generally, it's a consideration. They know if they don't put enough thread on this screw for this kind of loading and situation it's in, the screw's going to back out or it's not going to withstand that load and it's going to fail. that kind of design process is pretty universal. People understand that if I put a hair trace of copper on a circuit board and I put 40 amps through it, it's probably not going to survive. Mm-hmm. Right? But that's the point, I think. And that to me is the gist, is that it's those decisions, those understanding the stresses that your product's going to see and how that will lead to failure. And then where's your margin? And it's all of those decisions that are not a reliability engineer's job. Those are design engineers or electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, software engineers. They make those decisions all the time, right? And so it's very similar to what you said, Chris. It's understand where your highest risks are. Understand what most likely failures are and resolve those.
Isn't it funny? But go ahead. You asked the question, you know, is this thing reliable? Yes or no? Isn't it funny how mm-hmm. People often phrase that question as a yes or no answer. I mean, if you're designing a car, is your car fast? Oh, yes. Engineers tend not to stop there. They say it can go 180 miles per hour at top speed, like this, that, and the other. Here's a number.
0 to 60, and all these other criteria. They can list them all off, yeah.
Except when it comes to reliability, all of a sudden it needs to be, is it reliable? Yes. Well, how reliable? It's for some reason, mm-hmm. these design engineers who often characterize as being in the domain of success, and us reliability engineers come in and say, no, everything's wrong. We're in the domain of failure, blah, blah, blah.
Well, it keeps us in business though, Chris. Everything's going to fail eventually, right? You know?
But it always has this sort of chasm between the reliability engineers who focus on failure and then and the designers who focus on success. And essentially the designers are making a system or product that can work, and reliability engineers want to ensure the system will work. It's great if you can feasibly make it work. It's going to work for the first 5 seconds, but will it work when the customer wants it to work? That's the question.
But design engineers, they get that. It's got to work long enough for the customer to get the value out of it. They know that if it doesn't work for the warranty period, they're screwed. If it doesn't work for long enough for the customer to buy it again or tell other people about it, if it doesn't work out of the box, they get that. Mm-hmm. That's a bad thing, right? But you're the way you phrase the other one is, you ask a design engineer how fast it goes, they give you all the stats and here's the evidence. When you ask them, is it reliable? I think that's where the mindset is that they'll say, yes, I considered, the stresses of the weight ratio on this, or the hold fat, the ability for this to connect, or this, the weld strength. And we designed all these things to be robust mm-hmm. and to have margin, but they didn't measure. And it's virtually impossible to measure every one of those things.
That's right.
Right. And so that goes back to your answer to this was, which are the ones that we don't know enough about, or which are the ones that are most likely to cause us to have failures? And think tools like FMEA and HALT and engineering judgment saying, there's this part is constrained and it doesn't have much margin. Will it last long enough? And it's that question that oftentimes doesn't get asked, is because the design team, the engineers they've got 1,000 things they need to take care of. And they know that that one's a little iffy, and it's not safe in many organizations to say, this part's a little on the edge. We need to understand it more, because that adds time and budget mm-hmm. and expenses to sorting that out. They're going to keep their fingers crossed and hope it gets through the testing and nobody notices.
Well, that's the gist.
I don't think it's cautions.
But that's the gist of reliability right there, isn't it? In a way,
it is.
You say
it is.
You want an organization where people who are trying to, who if they do stumble across this potential design flaw, don't feel structurally bound to not report it. That's the gist, isn't it? In a way, the organization that encourages these people and essentially says, "Thank God you found this failure or found this deficiency before the customer got it. Let's celebrate this." Mm-hmm. This discovery and do something about it. That too could be argued as the gist of engineering.
Yeah, very much so. And it was highlighted by my companion on the panel in a senior operations manager and been involved with many different startups and companies in the Valley. He said, part of the culture is that you have to celebrate failures, right? He agreed with that sentiment. He said, you also have to have budget for it. It doesn't do you any good to bring up this issue and not have any money to do anything about it. And so it's, you can't go back to your venture capitalist and say, oh, we found this issue. We need another $500,000. No, you need to plan on that right up front, that you know you're going to find stuff. And it's easier to give money back than it is to ask for more in the last minute. And there's all kinds of strategies there. But the back to that, it's got to be that culture. And one of the ways I try implementing this with organizations is in the design review process. It's not a dog and pony show for management and your funders saying how wonderful your product is. It's a engineer and engineer discussion about where's the uncertainty and where's the least margin. And then what can we do about those, right? How do we peel back what we don't know so that it becomes more certain? Or how do we understand the duration to failures for areas with the least margin and then prioritize that? So it often leads into an FMEA type discussion. But it's hard for a designer who's the eminent expert on XYZ technology to come in and say, you know, everything's pretty good except for these three things I'm not too sure about. It's admitting they're not sure. And that is culturally difficult to do, at least in the U.S. In some cultures, it's near impossible.
Mm-hmm. And I think
you have to create a culture to make that available.
And you talked about venture capitalists, and that's glad you did, because there's been number of instances I've been aware of privately, and I suppose people are aware of publicly, when you have someone pitching an idea to the shark, to the venture capitalist, the person who's going to invest in your great idea. And if you are the person who's making the pitch and you say, here's my projected cash flow and revenue, outgoings, incomings, all those sorts of things, and they do it based on everything going perfectly, or there being no issues, or no fudge factor, for lack of a better term, most venture capitalists say thank you and walk away, because they know that mindset, that the person who came to them with this rose-tinted view of how their baby's going to come into being doesn't get that things are going to be not as they would like them to be, and have to essentially, like you say, budget for that. And if you don't, you're not in the business of making money. Mm-hmm. So you look at any Shark Tank episode, there's always one person who tends to be challenged for their projections based on them being realistic, because they don't factor in the things they don't want to occur, but everyone knows will occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it won't happen to us. We're brilliant. We know what we're doing. We've got this sorted, you know. I was listening to an audiobook the last couple of weeks, on and off, and one of the things they talked about is in the development process is that you have to be willing to learn, and which is so consistent with the work we do in reliability engineering, is we're doing all this in analysis and modeling and testing in order to learn something. We're essentially trying to find the weaknesses or show that it's strong enough, either or. But if the organization just wants to ignore that and doesn't want to learn from that, or if even from field fair, I've had general managers tell me that, oh, customers always complain about our products. That's just what they do. Yeah, you know, he had a 50% field failure rate.
Yeah, that's always what they do if you have a 50% failure, right?
Exactly. But he had the mindset that, yeah, stuff fails and people complain about it. That's just part of the business. Yeah, whatever. Why are we talking about this? So we backed up from that. I digress. The gist of reliability engineering really goes back to those decisions that are being made of, yeah, we got this. This is solid. This is close to the margin, we're not sure, or there's uncertainty. For example, if you're bringing in a vendor, and I always pick on power supplies, that's just my habit, and you're not going to build your own power supply, you're going to buy one and insert it into your product. power supplies fail pretty regularly. They're not the most robust. I mean, some are great and they're used appropriately, integrated in systems well, and they're never an issue. But most of them, in my experience, are between them and connectors, power supplies connectors, are two places you go look for what's going to cause problems. But if you just go, well, we're going to buy it from this company and they have a 1-year warranty, so that must be good. And you just stick it in your product and assume it's going to be good. That to me is a red flag. Is what do you know about its performance? What do you know about how it's integrated and how it behaves and interacts with your product? How is it likely to fail? So I always advise teams, if you have to build into your culture, is you got to ask about price and feature set and capabilities and delivery and all these other things when you set up a supplier. That's fine. But you also need to learn how to ask, what's going to fail in our application and how do you know? And the sales guy on the other side is really going to tell you that, oh, it'll never fail, don't worry about it. And that's a red flag that he doesn't know, or really doesn't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But you need to know. That's a question that's vital for any design element, and especially with vendor-supplied parts, is, well, how will it fail? In our application, what's its most likely way that it's going to fail? And how do you know? And it gives you the basis then to make a judgment. Is this good enough for what we're trying to do? Or do I need to find another solution or change the design? Right? But that goes for every component, every attachment, every feature on your product is, well, how will it fail? And how do I know? And what's our, and it's just, that's got to be ingrained in the thought process throughout the organization. And it goes back to, well, what are those dominant failures? And let's do something about those. But unless you have a list of 100 potential failures, you don't know which are the dominant ones. At least I think so. I guess I like failures too much.
And then having the company or that's right, in the organization to celebrate the discovery of said failure and then have the budget to do something about it.
Yeah. And that all has to be done long before you get deeper into the program. Yeah, I think it's the gist. Is you got to deal with the failures. And I think a big, in a parallel to this question is, well, what do we do as reliability people, right? What do we do? Well, part of it is enabling good decisions, right? Part of it is if our electrical team is not familiar with component derating, well, let's get a derating guideline and teach them how to use it. And then take down the barrier the procurement often puts up. Well, that part's too expensive. Let's buy the cheaper part that has no margin on it, but it still has the same function. Like, well, that's a problem. There's some training that goes in there and teaching and so on. But it's setting up the safety nets that saying, I'm not sure this is a weak spot in the organization. And then we bring the tools in to help them peel back. What do we know and don't know? And is it good enough or not? Well, here's the evidence, right? We help them make better decisions. We don't just go off and do testing and say, hey, it doesn't work. That's not what reliability people should do.
No, that's not helping. That's admiring a problem.
Yeah. Well, I'm right there with admiring problems. I really love a good failure. but I have learned that that's not what our primary role is. And so in most teams, and especially this group yesterday, they're as startup groups and they're very small teams, is reliability is going to happen whether or not you pay attention to it, whether you even talk about it ever, right? The product will perform and have some time to failure, and it may delight your customers or it may absolutely devastate your market, your ability to ship your products. It will happen. It's not like if you ignore it, it just won't ever, your product will never fail. It will happen irregardless. And it's based on the decisions you make and how you design and build your product, right? Now you can consciously think through, what are the areas that are the weakest, or what are the areas of the most concern, or what are the areas that we need to make sure we have enough margin or robustness, or thought through how it will fail and how do we solve that? If you take that time, and as my colleague said, and budget for it, you're likely to get a closer result to what you expect is going to happen versus being surprised by whatever it is you thought you did. Mm-hmm. And I think that resonated with this group real well, as they started to realize that reliability is not this separate thing that some organizations could do a bunch of testing and then they can say their product is good. You know, one guy in this group came up afterwards and said, so it's not okay for us just to not talk about reliability and offer a very short warranty and we'll be okay. No, not necessarily. You might be just fine. But you also might be blown out of the water. That uncertainty exists, and you can consciously go do something about it. So anyway, it's a 20-minute answer to what was a short question. And I only took 2 minutes to answer it in the seminar yesterday, but it ended up being questions afterwards, which was, mm-hmm. I think it was a hot topic. That's why I threw that at you today.
No, it's a valid point. I mean, it's hard if you're not involved in the reliability engineering space, but you're almost thrust into talking about it or doing something about it because you have to. As you say, if you're involved in product development, you're involved in reliability, whether you like it or not.
That's right. No, you should like it. It's a great thing.
It can be your friend. I mean, this is a differentiator between, let's not just talk about customers. You make a reliable product. You do a proper FAMEA. You make your first design a reliable design. So time to market is truncated. Development costs go way down. You get that leg up on your competitors. So your customers get your device much, much sooner because you don't have to deal with all the issues and horror stories that your manufacturing staff find out right, you know, in the last minute before you want to ship your first products.
That's right.
So it doesn't just help the customers. It helps the development process, schedule, and budget. And it can be intimidating trying to get into that space, trying to work out, well, what do I do? How do I, if I need to boil reliability engineering down to a few key points, the gist, dare I say, what does it look like? And I suppose from today's conversation we heard between the two of us, it is focusing on the things that matter, the vital few. It is celebrating and having a culture where you want failures to be discovered as early and as quickly as possible. And the third thing is having the budget and resources to do something about it. And resources aren't just money, it's also skill sets and everything else. So is that a satisfactory answer?
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah. No, that works. Yeah. No, it's easy. But it really is. It's just being conscious of it, of those three points, I think will make a world of difference in whether it's a startup or a well-established Fortune 100 company design team. It's still the same elements that have to be there. And so,
yeah.
Cool. All right. I don't know how to do a follow-up.
As usual, Fred.
Yeah, we'll just wrap it up. I think if anybody has a comment or want to send us accolades for boiling it down for like this, send it over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. We'd love to hear from you. Any other topics or questions? If you were in that panel or in that seminar yesterday, what questions would you have for how do I deal with reliability or how do I move forward and understand this stuff? We'd love to hear from you on that. Make a topic for a future podcast. All right. Well, thanks, Chris. Let you get on with the rest of your day. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We certainly appreciate it. We'll talk to y'all later.
Absolutely. Bye now.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.